You're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
4 seconds left.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to RBLR Lightning. As always, my name is Jake Ricker. Alongside me, it's Jose Mataro. It's Matt Gannon. Guys, welcome back to the show. We are going back to Tampa Bay, all tied up at 2 games apiece. What a playoff series this has been, boys. Lots to talk about, lots to go through. Excited to be here with you back once again. But first and foremost, before we get into everything, guys, how you doing today?
Doing good. I'm excited about the fact that the series are all tied up, so I'm ready to get into it.
I'm excited we got the gang back together. It feels like it's been a while since we've had the three of us.
The three pain.
No, this is the most excited I've been for a show in a good long while.
Well, and I'm glad that we're all excited because it was very close to being not too excited in Montreal up 3-1 going back to Tampa. There was a pivotal game four that the Lightning won. And by the way, welcome to everybody who's joining with us live. Don't forget, Beverly, she's already in the chat saying, I love this comment, by the way. Hey, boys, let's just go ahead and give Hags the Conn Smythe already. 100% agree. He is the runaway favorite right now. We're a long time away from having that conversation, but Brandon Hagel has been on fire, and he'll be one of the guys that we're going to be talking lots about in this series. But big for the Lightning to win game four, but we have to start first with game three. So going to Montreal, guys, we knew this was going to be a tough place for the Lightning to go play. It's one of the loudest, if not the loudest, arenas in all of the playoffs. Montreal fans are very passionate, whether you like it or not. and game three, well, Lightning fall in this one by a final score of 3-2. And I don't know about you guys, but, you know, I thought the Lightning looked okay in this game, but I think Montreal really had the better game overall. And then in overtime, because of course every game the Lightning have played against the Canadiens in round one has gone to overtime up until this point, obviously, this was dominated by Montreal, which was disappointing after what we had seen from the Lightning in game two of that overtime, where they absolutely dominated. Two completely different overtimes. Montreal comes away with the win and taking a 2-1 series lead.
I mean, I felt like the Lightning weren't hardly even in this game, to be honest. In the first one of the two, the only reason the Lightning were playing as well as they did is because of Vasilevsky. I mean, he was making save after save. We can get into the game four later, but I didn't like the performance out of Carlisle. I thought that he did not compliment Liljeberg very well. Which when Liljeberg's got someone to compliment him, great player. When he doesn't, instantly that line's going to be a bit of a liability. But this was the Vasilevsky show, and unfortunately the rest of the team didn't wake up in time to allow him to steal a win for him.
You mentioned waking up, which brings me to Braden Point. Finally he gets on the score sheet, and he's been a bit a bit disappointing this year. I mean, that's an objective fact, but I was glad to see not only him, but, you know, the power play get on the board as well. I know they, you know, had a couple goals as well earlier this series, but still good to see him get on the board. But yeah, after the pretty much the exact midway mark of this game, 10 minutes into the second period, just the wheels really did fall off the bus. That's when you started seeing all of the two-on-ones or the clear-cut breakaways that Vasilevsky straight up bailed them out on. There's no reason why this game should have gone to overtime. Let's be honest. Vazzy did was the only reason this game got to overtime at all. And of course, it was a good slap shot from Lane Hudson that ended up being the game winner. But no,
nothing you can do about that CNI shot either. That was just such great puck luck for them.
It was a miracle that got through at all. He's fighting a quadruple screen, if not more. So, just like you said, a seeing eye shot. He got it on net, got into an open space. There's nothing Vazzy can do about that. You take a goalie's eyes away, and he's just, at the mercy of the puck.
Well, and it's funny that you guys say this, and because I think you're right. I think Montreal dominated this game for the most part. But the Lightning had a 2-1 lead. in this game. They were up by a goal at one point. So they definitely had a chance to come away and win it, even if they didn't play their greatest game. And Andre Vasilevsky is doing Andre Vasilevsky things with all those breakaway saves that he did have. But again, I go back to the overtime. Like, listen, you're going to have games where you have good puck luck or you don't have good puck luck. You're not playing well, but you find yourself in front. Bottom line is they got two overtime. But that overtime performance for the Bolts in this game was really, really bad. And this team has struggled in overtime. I'm not sure if you guys talked about this last time after the first two games. But this team's obviously not been good. They finally got a win thanks to J.J. Moser in game two. But you kind of hoped, at least for me, that after that performance in game two, that they would come out with a much stronger overtime in game three.
They came out stronger in the first half of the game, I would say. And again, that it was the halfway point where everything just fell apart, and I'm not sure what it was, but they looked tired going into the third period. Montreal was skating circles around him, so it really seemed. And a lot of people were complaining about the overpassing. Everyone was saying that was kind of the downfall, maybe, was the just nobody wants to shoot, everyone wants to pass. But I kind of respectfully disagree on that front, because you got to give credit where it's due. Jakub Dobesz, he's been a pretty darn good goaltender this series, but there's nothing that's beating him just straight on. There's nothing that's beating him clean. He does like to move around a lot. He's a bit squirrely in that net, so if you can get him moving and pass that puck, find an open seam where he is moving and out of position, I think that's going to be the best way, and kind of the way that he has been getting beat on some, you know, also some greasy goals, as we'll see later on. But the overpassing was kind of the big gripe that I saw coming out of this game. But to answer your question, or not answer your question, Jake, but yeah, it was they came out with a little bit of steam, and then it just really went away pretty quick.
The overpassing, I mean, I don't have too much of a problem with. That's the DNA of this team. It's been the DNA of this team for basically 20 plus years, and it's what makes them really good, I think, too, is that they end up opening up lanes that, you know, they go for the high quality puck possession type game where, yeah, it might be some overpassing, but they're not forcing shots that then can result in turnovers. The other thing that Montreal is doing really, really well, and we saw this, I can pull up the stats while I'm talking here. We saw this in game two, you know, quite a bit also, is that they're blocking a whole heck of a lot of shots. And anytime that you're going to get as much shot blocking as they're actually able to put on the ice, you're not going to get pucks in the easy shots through to the goalie. So in this game three that we're talking about, there are 19 block shots by Montreal. So you're going to have to move the puck around. And you're saying that Dobesz has been pretty good about, you know, straight on shots. It was a Hagel kind of deceptive shot that was pretty much straight on that did go in. So I don't know that the team needs to move to a shot quantity type of game. I think they might get burnt more on the rush than if they're, you know, trying to maintain as a puck possession team. But what they're doing can work. You know, just if we go purely shot, you know, volume, you have to understand what happens on the other side of that too.
And that's the biggest thing that they struggle with, is the counter, not the counterattack, but Montreal coming in with speed and numbers. That's, you know, what their biggest weakness was this entire season at 5-on-5, it seemed, was teams coming down the other side with speed. If the team's set up in the zone, it really wasn't a huge issue for this team all year. The penalty kill numbers speak for itself right there. If they're set up and you're kind of trapped in your zone, chances are they're going to get it out. But yeah, it's those rush chances that are really going to get you. And this is a possession-based team. They're not, you know, the Carolina Hurricanes, where they'll just throw anything and everything on net. And I don't think that's going to change, and I don't think that's going to be the way that they win.
I believe it was Dan Hyno who spoke in game four. And he did mention he did want to see the team shoot the puck a lot more and thought they were holding on to a little bit too much. And maybe there's a little bit of that balance, right, of passing a lot, and because that is the team's identity, but also still shooting the puck when you can. Do you want to get to a quick comment here? This one from Daniel, speaking on the OT start in game three. And yeah, you're not wrong when it comes to those players, but it brings up something that I do want to talk about, because I saw a lot of, I don't know if hate's the right word, but displeasure. We'll go with that. With some of Cooper's coaching decisions in these last couple of games. And to be honest, I just don't understand it. I know it was a frustrating loss for the Lightning in game three, and they go down 2-1, and things are not looking great at the time, especially heading into, and then game four when they go down 2-0. But John Cooper is a coach that's been in this league for a very long time. He has won a lot of playoff games. He's approaching becoming the coach with a single franchise having won the most playoff games. He's up there in all-time wins for the postseason. He's second, made the playoffs for 9 years. This guy knows what he is doing. So I just don't understand why there's so much backlash from the Lightning fan base on some of Cooper's decisions. Was that the best decision in game three of overtime? Probably not. And even Cooper would probably say that. But to bash as much as I've seen, I think it's a little bit crazy.
It's an easy scapegoat. You know, there's really no real, like, one thing in game three that you can point out and be like, this lost us the game. You know, it's a multitude of things. And, of course, your fans, you know, I'm no saint. You know, I get frustrated as well, and I'll point fingers at players or coaches or something sometimes. I think it's just, you know, a bit of frustration boiling over and people just looking for some kind of scapegoat. Because at the end of the day, these people as well, they're going to fight to the death for John Cooper as well.
Nobody goes on social media in order to put together a rational point of view and make a post.
Guilty.
Like everything is based on emotion, really, on there. So, I mean, that's a perfect way of putting it, Matt. That they have scapegoats. You know, it's, you know, off the what did you say, off the, you know, just off the cuff analysis of what went wrong. It's got to be this one thing. I end up getting on there too much just reading other people's stuff. And it's even looking at the Canadian fans, it's hilarious what they grasp onto rather than actual intellectual conversation about, you know, breaking down the game. It's always something absolutely ridiculous. So, yeah, people might complain, but at least we know that those sort of complaints don't really have an impact when it comes to decision-making in the front office. So, you know, Coop's doing a good job.
And he's not listening to these fans either. So keep complaining.
I don't know, man. Every time we make suggestions, it seems like they come to fruition.
Maybe he's listening to us, but we're analysts.
Cooper's obviously watching this podcast and taking notes. well, things would only get more interesting. Joe, you kind of alluded to it with the comments after game four. Let's talk about that one. That's at the forefront of everybody's mind right now. But Lightning go down in this game 2-0. And I think what was one of the more ridiculous games of this series, by the way, it stinks the Lightning drew Montreal in the first round. I mean, this series is a battle, and both these teams are very evenly matched, I think. I think whoever comes out of this series might have a really good chance to go far into the postseason. And having a battle between these two guys, if you're an NHL fan, is fantastic. If you're a Lightning or Canadiens fan, you can't stand it anymore. But Canadiens go up 2-0 in this series off 2-0 in this game off of some what I thought was crazy puck luck, especially on that first goal. I'll get to the officiating in a minute because that's a whole nother topic. But the Lightning come back in this game, and they go on to win it by a final score of 3-2. We've had all these one-goal games. Lightning do win this one in regulation. By the way, real quick, there was a comment on, I think it was the Hockey Guys YouTube channel, that said, how dare the Lightning win this game in overtime, which I thought was pretty funny after all three games have gone to overtime to start. But for me, guys, the turning point in this game, I don't think there's any doubt, was Max Kroger's unbelievable hit at center ice. That was a momentum and maybe even series-changing hit for the Lightning in this game.
I mean, there's no way to argue against that, and it was a massive hit. I love the fact that he was in the game. Again, as a swap out for Carlisle, it was a great choice, great coaching decision by an elite coach. But it did change things, especially when it's a star player that gets tagged like that. It's about as clean as you can get. Anyone that's going frame for frame on that, trying to say that it was the primary point of contact is the head, those are the people on the X platform again, or wherever you're seeing them complain that they're taking it, you know, so you know, literally one frame at a time, when that's not the way the actual play goes down. It happens very, very, very fast, especially something like that. He directed his shoulder right through the middle of the body. If you're leaning forward, you're going to have your, you know, your head involved in being hit, as Slavkovsky did on that. But that wasn't the primary point of contact. It was as clean, as heavy, and as hard as you possibly can hit somebody. And if you want to complain about somebody, then I can't remember who it was that passed it to him, but that was it's kind of a suicide pass, as they're called.
It was a bit of a buddy pass, but Dave Mishkin's call for that hit, it was amazing as well. And he said it was as clean as the day is long, and it absolutely was. What issue I've been seeing Montreal fans take with that hit is he left his feet. No, he made the hit, and then his feet come up. He didn't elevate into the hit or anything. It was textbook center ice, open ice hit. Like, it does not get any.
Frustrates me so much, man, when it's like he left his feet. Some of these people have such passion, as you mentioned. You know, it's a hard place to play in, but the fans can be so stupid. I forgot how miserable Canadian fans are, because they haven't really been relevant for the past few years. And you should know better. Like, you should grow up playing hockey. If this is your sport, you know, you should know these sort of things, that when you make contact with somebody and you're going as fast as you are, that energy's got to go somewhere, and usually it's up. Every time that someone comes off the ice doesn't mean that they left their feet for a hit.
Yeah, I guess they don't teach physics in Quebec or something, but I don't remember these Montreal fans being this annoying. And I'm, you know, sorry if this is out of pocket, but they're straight up annoying and whiny. I don't remember it being like this at all in 2021, maybe because it was just a shellacking and they had no room to talk. It's a close series, so of course there's going to be bickering and arguing. But the thing that I have been trying to wrap my head around all day, you know, going back from last night as well, is, you mentioned it, Joe, this is your thing. This is your sport. We've talked about the Panthers fans in the past, and they're generally, you know, new to the sport of hockey. They're annoying and really just brash and kind of unpleasant in all facets. And you can blame them for being a bit ignorant when it comes to something. You can't blame them. I'm sorry. With Montreal fans, this is your thing. Like, I have to imagine these are like multi-generational Montreal fans of the Canadiens, and they're ignorant about everything that's happened in this game. I feel like it's not just the innocent ignorance that the Panthers fans display a lot. I feel like they're just being willfully ignorant when it comes to this. They're just seeing with, you know, tunnel vision and just really choosing to believe what they want to believe.
I mean, just to pile on here, and I know we're jumping ahead by a game, but there was the James high stick call in game four, where James gets high-sticked as he's entering the zone right around the top of the circle. And then after it looks like he's engaged with the defending player. The defending player kind of takes like another swipe. That one clearly misses him, but he still grabs his face and turns and then gets a high-stick call. I have seen that thing clipped so beautifully that it skips that first legit high-stick and just follows through with the miss. And then they call him an embellisher, a diver, which, I don't know, if you touch your head, apparently now that's they want the guy to be investigated by the league for diving and get a suspension or something. It's you're right. Well, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Let's talk about that call specifically in this game four, because I thought that it's just a really good veteran type of move by James, because he does get high sticked. If you watch the full clip, they zoom in on it. You see him get high sticked. You see his head go back. He goes right back. And I think he notices that he didn't get the call. And then so he says, all right, let me try and sell this a little bit more. And then that stick slowly comes up a little bit. He sees his opportunity and really sells it with the hand to the face. And the ref sees that and then calls it. So was that one that the ref saw a phantom high sticking? Probably. But there was a high stick seconds before. I think that's a veteran move by James.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't think that it was the second one that was getting called. I think it was the first one. If you look at the ref that was down low, I think that was Wes McCauley. I could have been wrong on it, but
of course it was.
he's watching it and he's starting to put his hand up before the second one happens, or right as he's holding his face. And it's the sort of thing where if you get slashed and it hurts, you're gonna probably say ow and yell at the ref if you don't get the call immediately. Sometimes the ref's got to process it for a quarter of a second. Don't forget, this was away from the play. He didn't have the puck, so he's trying to – that ref's monitoring two situations at the exact same time. It's a call. I don't – there's nothing to complain about. And if you get hit in the head or anywhere that causes a reaction, it might take a stride or two before you completely feel pain or react. It's just such a dumb thing to hold on to by a bunch of dumb fans.
See, in my opinion, I think he sold it. I think it was a sell job. And you know what? No shame in that. It's the playoffs. Do what you got to do to help your team win. They scored on the ensuing penalty or the ensuing power play, and I think it was well justified for the penalty that Jake Guentzel got, which was super soft. I don't think the whistle had even gone when he tapped Jakub Dobish's glove, so I think it was well deserved. I think it was a bit of a sell job, but people aren't.
I'm not saying it's not selling. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you're going to yell and react.
Yes, yeah. And he might have just been bracing for it. Like, you know, it's a thing. It's not nearly as bad as Crosby's from the other day. That was rough. But there's not a lot of fans that are, you know, there's some. They're vocal, and there's a lot of them. They're complaining about that one. But what I'm trying to wrap my head around is the Kucherov dive. Have you seen them complaining about that, guys?
I've not only seen them complain about it, I did break that one down frame by frame to see if they have any, if it holds weight at all. I don't know.
What player, especially Nikita Kucherov, in his own zone with the puck, is going to feel a cross check and then throw himself into the boards going 15 miles an hour? Who's doing that? What player is doing that?
He sacrifices a lot for the team. I don't think he's willing to do that.
No, absolutely not. In your own zone as well. Like put it in context. It makes zero sense at all. Then you watch the game and you watch the replay. It still doesn't make any sense at all. I think these people are just so tunneled visioned. They hate Kucherov. Again, he is the villain. He's the villain of the league. Honestly, there's more people that dislike him than do like him. But in Montreal, he is the most hated man there.
Well, especially after his press conference.
Absolutely. That was the nail in the coffin. But I just, instead of complaining about the actual issue, the actual dive, sell job, whatever you want to call it, you're going to complain about this dive just because it's, I don't know, not an easy target, but it's just the most wanted man in Montreal. To me, that is just crazy mental gymnastics that you can force yourself to believe that he took a dive, threw himself into the boards, going 15 miles an hour or so, maybe a little less, but still, nobody in their right mind is doing that.
If you wanted to tell me that he went down easy, I could probably buy that. You know, I could say that he probably went down a little bit easy. But if you look at what he does, he checks over his shoulder, throws a head fake, and in that process, he gets a little bit of additional energy put into him through that hit. And if you look at his right skate, he tries so hard to catch his edge in order to stay on his feet. He tries really hard. He snows the ice by trying to keep himself up. He's not faking it. He's not diving for sure. If you want to say it's easy, that's, you know, they went down a little bit easy. I can definitely understand. I mean, but there's no complaining there because Gord got in game one.
Thank you.
An even lighter penalty in game one, it was like the exact same thing. He gave a guy a little bit of a push, and the guy went down.
I thought did the same thing this game, right?
Did he do it this game too?
There was also a moment in game four where the Lightning got called. It was when the Montreal scored on their first power play goal.
That was the Jake Guentzel penalty where he tapped the glove.
Listen, there were a lot of penalties in this game that I don't think were – I think officiating has been bad in this – for both sides. I do not think officiating has been good whatsoever.
It's been terrible.
Easier for me to admit after the Lightning won a game and have the series tied 2-2, but I don't think the officiating has been good for both sides. But the point being is that I don't think there's an argument for a lot of these calls that Montreal fans are complaining about right now, and I don't think there's complaints for the Lightning. You look at the power plays – they were about even. I know, you know, there was a whole thing when what referee said it, that they needed to even it up or something like that a couple years back. That still happened. But the power plays were even. And if you can't admit the Lightning were able to turn their game around, they got their momentum back after the hit, after Brandon Hagel's leadership, which I want to get to Brandon Hagel in just a second, because we need to talk about the Lightning and what they did in the series. But That is what changed this game. It was that Max Scherzer hit and Brandon Hagel's leadership, which, by the way, can we talk about Brandon Hagel, who has just been on fire this entire series long? He literally took a puck up high, I think off of his neck or just upper body to score what was the game-winning goal off of Kucherov's shot to the net, which, by the way, was poetry. That Montreal's first goal comes on a weird deflection off of a player, and then the Lightning score one off of a deflection of a player. I thought that was great. And Brandon Hagel has been absolutely unbelievable. I know me and Michael have been saying it for a long time. I think we've said it on this podcast for a long time that Brandon Hagel is a future captain. And I think it was kind of a joke at the start, but I'm dead serious about it. I mean, Cooper even talked about this after the game, and that Hagel stood up and somebody clipped it. You can go back and find it where you can see Hagel stand up on the bench, say something to both sides because he's right in the middle. And that was right, I think, after the Crozier hit. And he means it. He means it and he shows it. And that's what Cooper said about Brandon Hagel. Gensel had some high praise for him as well. And he's been unbelievable in this series.
Listen, Carolina did the thing a couple of years ago where they had Justin Falk and Justin Williams. They both wore C's. Why can't we do that? Why can't we do that with Hedman and Hagel? I mean, don't take it from Hedman, but also give one to Hagel. Why not? Swap it, you know, each game or something. I mean, he is turning into the de facto captain. I mean, everyone is saying, again, we were saying this, what, 2 years ago now? Like, it's been a good while that we started this as a joke, but it's turning into actual legitimate, like, conversation piece that we all should be having. Pardon? Oh, yeah. But no, it's true, honest to God, the way that he plays, the way that he speaks, you know, in front of the media, in front of the bench. This going back to these Canadiens fans, they were saying about how he was barking at his team, you know, mid-game. What? You're trying to hype your team up? You're trying to, like, you know, get the bench.
Never played before.
Exactly. Yeah. You're trying to get your bench fired up, and they're like, oh, how unprofessional. Are you kidding me? That is what I want in a captain.
I don't like to buy players jerseys. I have my own. If you anybody who knows me, I have my own name and number on my jersey. That's my whole thing. I don't like buying players' jerseys. I want to buy a Brandon Hagel jersey so bad. That's how much I love this guy. He's so good, and the energy he brings is unbelievable. And he's been so good in this series. So good.
So good. What do you want me to add to it? It was him and Vassy in game three. It's all that we really had. So, you know, he keeps bringing it every game, man.
Let's get to a couple quick comments here. This one from Daniel saying, this postseason, Hagel has really stepped up and has been showing leadership. I think Hedman is gone. Kucherov would want that. See, I just can't see Kucherov as the leader type. Maybe he's different in the locker room behind closed doors, but and Cooper actually did say today to the media that Hagel is going to wear a letter at some point. Now, whether that's an A or a C or whatever that means, but he's already talked about it. I personally don't think Kucherov is the leader type. He's had an A before, but if Hedman does retire at some point, which hopefully he's going to be back in this postseason soon. He has been skating and traveling with the team, which is a really good sign, by the way. I would imagine, I think Hagel could make a good case. But for right now, we're worried about what's going on in this postseason. Joe, I want to get back to a comment here, too, because you said you wanted to circle back to this. Also here from Daniel saying, what's the difference in your mind of going down easy and diving?
You are in the NHL and actually in just about every level of play, but especially in the NHL, expected to have a certain amount of athleticism and skating ability. Now, if I were to play in the NHL with my beer league hockey skills, if one of these guys comes and gives
that
me...
That guy does it.
Sorry. But he's got the strength and athleticism to be able to overcome you know, that lack of skill, if you will. But if one of these guys comes and gives me a bump, I'm going to go down pretty damn easy. The difference between an embellishment and going down easy is that if somebody comes by while I do have my balance, I do have good position, gives me a bump, and I let myself go, that's different. That's where you're looking for a call versus putting yourself in a position where maybe you probably could have grabbed yourself. Maybe you know, should have been in balance there, and it was what normal play wouldn't have resulted in a penalty.
So eloquently said.
I think that's fair.
I had to notice Joe strikes about again.
I think there's, you know, this – everybody always says in the playoffs, right, whistles go away. There's not as many penalties. They let the players play. But – and so you, think, I think they should let the players play. But then you have some – and that's where you see that, you know, guy's light on his feet, gets knocked down. And you're thinking, oh, that's not a call, maybe in the regular season. But they have been calling that in this series. So, you know, there,
my,
there's
my troubles, they've been kind of inconsistent with it where, you know, there'll be a light call. Like I said, there was, you know, maybe the Gourde one was early in this game. And there's another one, maybe I'm getting it confused with, Gensel had one. Maybe that was the one in game one where it was a light call. And then later in the game, there was one that seemed significantly more egregious, nothing at all. So the consistencies were where I had the issue.
And then there was the slash that Kucherov had that I think was a terribly weak call. Yeah, it's been insanely inconsistent. I was shocked that the Crozier hit was deemed clean. Again, it was clean as day, but you just don't know with these refs. You don't know if they're going to call a major on the ice and then just reduce it to two or probably nothing. Like, you just do not know in this scenario.
I'll say that, you know, letting them play is exactly what we saw in, what was that, 2011 against Boston for the conference finals. The dirtiest player, the dirtiest team in the league was Boston at that time, and the Lightning had an amazing power play. Refs ate the whistles. It gave an advantage to Boston because they just continued their dirty ways, but without any consequence. You can't. It's got to be tough to officiate. It's the playoffs. I guess everyone's going to be emotional, but you'd hope there'd be a little bit more consistency.
And real quick, I do have a bit of a question going back to coaching decisions and. Maybe some iffy decisions by John Cooper late in game four, Montreal. It was after the power play had expired. So it was like 35 seconds left or so with the goalie pulled. He throws Kucherov out there. And we know he does that during the regular season. Like, let's not beat around the bush. You know, Cooper and Cooch probably like to, you know, stat pad a little bit, you know, get that freebie empty net goal. What do you think about him deploying him in, you know, a one goal playoff game, trying to throw him out there for an empty net goal or something?
So the guys of the defensive players have commented that they like Kucherov in the defensive zone. He's got a sneaky game that he's really good with, being able to get pucks out. Mm-hmm. Something that you can do, a lot of the defensive play has to do with an outside in breakout, meaning that you take the puck from like the corner and you put it to the front of the net where you'll have numbers. That's usually where you'll see them break out outside in over and over and over again in regular play. When you no longer have a man advantage, that stops being an option because you'll have a guy on the offensive side of the puck that's sitting right there ready to take advantage of that. So instead, you have to have basically a rim around play where you're putting it up the boards in order to get it out. You're trying whatever you can do to get it out. Kucherov oftentimes late in games, especially with the goalie pulled, ends up playing on the right side boards. And because of that, it allows the defenseman to just rim it around, especially if they're a right-handed shot, to hit it hard, knowing that he's so amazing with pulling pucks off the boards that it's likely not going to get to that point man, and it's going to be cleared from the zone. That's my logic in it. You know, if that's what they're seeing versus anything else, I'm not sure, but he's really good with that spot in those scenarios.
Coach Joe twice in one episode.
There's a clip of the, I believe it's Sportsnet intermission crew, where they break down some of Cooper's decisions, and talk about how Montreal has the last change so they can get their matchups that they want, and how, you know, Marty St. Louis, in his coaching style, which, by the way, shout out to Marty. He's done a fantastic job.
Take his number down.
Credit where credit is due. What'd you say?
I said take his number down.
And they were basically talking about how, you know, Cooper's playing for his matchup. Marty just wants to have a flow, and you'll see where Cooper will put out a guy like Cirelli, and they wanted Cirelli's line against a specific Montreal line, and if they don't throw him out, they'll take the face off and they'll go right to the bench. So the Lightning are very much playing matchups that they want, and they will have guys coming on and off the ice very quick. I can't explain it as well. as Joe probably could if he had seen the video. But there is a video out there if you can find it. I believe it's Sportsnet Intermission Crew. That it is an interesting breakdown of Cooper's coaching style in this series. But right now, listen, it's tied 2-2. Oh, also, speaking of coaching, did you guys hear the story? Shout out to Gabby Shirley, who I think does an absolutely fantastic job. I'm glad she's back here after she had her baby. Congratulations to her and her husband, by the way, as well. But Dan Hynote was talking about how she asked him, how do you get a guy like Crozier ready for his first – it was Crozier and Bjorkstrand. How do you get them ready for their first playoff game when they haven't played one in a while? And Hynote told a story that Bjorkstrand said, I want to get hit. And so Hynote called over Geeky to come in and hit him as hard as he possibly could. And he did that. And then Hynote checked in on Bjorkstrand and said, you good? How you feeling? And he said, do it again. So I don't know if you guys saw that. It was a great story.
I swear to God, my best friend used to say that about playing high school hockey, is that, you know, a really good shot like that would wake him up, get him all jazzed and prepared. And it was it's almost like doing smelling salts at the time. So I can definitely understand where he's coming from.
Absolutely. It was a really funny story. I actually really do like Dan Hynote behind the mic. I think he's a really good talker and really funny. Not even just this one case right here, but he's been on the Block Party before, and just he's a really good quote. And I really liked hearing that story as well.
Quick comment, and then we got to get to our three stars of the week. This one from Lisa saying, I'm concerned about Point. Why is it that he seems so much slower? Any thoughts on this, guys?
They're covering him up a lot. I mean, they've got some really, really fast players, and they are covering very well for Montreal. So you're not getting those faster breakout plays. And he definitely has been not hitting his, you know, hitting that explosiveness that we're used to him seeing. So I think the combination of those two things means that they're expending a lot of resources on Point to keep him quiet. The fact that he was so open to score the power play goal that he had, has been the exception, not the rule. They've been all over him. So yeah, it's one thing that he's not doing that, but the truth is that they have to cover for him. So Montreal is expending a lot of energy too, just making sure that he's accounted for, because you can see how elite he is when he's got that, you know, little bit of opportunity. I don't think it's anything that we have to be too worried about in the long run for the team as a whole.
But I think it goes well beyond Montreal closing in on him pretty good. Like, this has been a season-long issue. And again, he's dealt with injuries this season. There were rumors of some off-ice issues that he might have been dealing with. And, you know, we have no room to speculate on what it could be. It was one or two reports about it. But, oh, bye, Jake. let me scoot.
Okay, I'm not sure what happened there. But
I think we're back. Matt, that's awesome. You look like a deer in headlights.
You guys both froze for me, and then I was just sitting there like, I don't know if this is me or if it's them. I don't know.
Perks of the new streaming platform.
All right, we're back now, and we're good. Okay, I'm sorry. Where were we?
I was kind of talking about the Braden Point situation. Again, I'm just hoping it's, you know, dealing with an injury, just a one-off year, because he's proven more times than not that he is an elite, you know, 40, 50 goal scorer kind of guy. He's ready for these Kucherov passes, but for whatever reason, this season, it just seems like he's unready. He's turning around a lot. He's not driving the net a lot. He might be scared, because it always is kind of those tumbles and his speed that does get him in some of these injury situations we've seen in the past, but I don't know. I don't like you said, Joe. Maybe don't read too much into it. Maybe this season it's just a one off. A good long off season might be what he needs. Hopefully it's not a long off season. Hopefully it's a pretty short off season. But you know, a good 2 months or so to really rest and just reset for next year.
All right. With that said, it's time to get to our three stars of, well, not the week, but of the last two games, I guess. Let's start off here with. Hang on one second as I get a set here. Let's start with our number three star of the week. Oh, it just got deleted on me. All right, we're going to go through manually. So, three stars of the week, guys. I don't think there was any debate too much for these three stars of the week. A lot of guys you know, really stood out. Like a couple honorable mentions. I think Yanni Gordon has been fantastic in this series. I've been really impressed with his play. I thought even Bjorkstrand in his, the one game that he played, I thought he looked pretty solid and looked like he was, maybe it's because he got hit by Connor Geeky and that really did fire him up. But I want to give Gord a shout out here, but a number three star, starting off with Jake Guentzel, who has just been absolutely fantastic in this series. I didn't realize in the whole series that he has 7 points, but he continues to help the Bolts score.
Yeah, I just pulled up the stats for the NHL playoffs right now. Jason Lacombe out of Anaheim, who I honestly don't know who he is. He's just a defenseman for Anaheim. Has 8 points. He's rocking.
Jackson Lacombe is a dog. He's actually great defensively as well. He's been shutting McDavid down. He's really good. I'm a big fan.
All right, I'll have to watch more West Coast stuff. But he's got 8 points and leads the NHL for playoff points right now. Just to put in perspective in terms of Guentzel.
Oh, Gensel's got 8 points. Yeah,
seven.
Oh, okay. 1 goal, 6 assists, which is crazy because it's been pretty quiet. Like, Jake Guentzel is a playoff performer, and, you know, we've known this since his first year in Pittsburgh when he won the Cup. This dude came out of nowhere and was killing all the teams that I was cheering for. I was actively cheering against the Penguins. I'm like, who's this pencil neck that's just killing all these teams? He's playing better than Crosby. And, no, dude, like, from, you know, time immemorial, he has been a playoff player. We know how good he is you know, during the regular season, but even when he was with the Canes, I think, you know, for that short stint, led the team in scoring just for them to get swept in the conference finals again. Not his fault at all. He steps up when the time is right. Maybe a couple bogus penalties here or there, but at the same time, the positives and what he does bring away from those two whatever penalties, yeah, one was pretty costly, but I still kind of disagree with it. He brings so much to the table, a great 200-foot player and just an everyman. Maybe not, you know, you can call him a Swiss Army knife, but he is just kind of a renaissance man, does everything really, really well.
And like you said, it seems quiet, but he's quietly tied for second for points in the playoffs. It's amazing the stuff that he does.
And he also rang that one off the crossbar last night, too. He got in alone. It was a great pass from, I think, Kucherov maybe. And, you know, he should have 2 goals and 6 assists.
Jake Guentzel has been on fire, and it's been great to see him continuing to do what he's been able to do. Another one of the top acquisitions the Lightning have made. Credit to JBB for bringing him in and signing him after Stamkos left this team. So number two star of the week. You know, I think this one, a lot of it comes from game number three of the series, but he's been fantastic all series long and a big reason letting him been in a lot of these games. And another than Andre Vasilevskiy, who earned the number two star of the week.
Been a while since I've heard any Canadiens fans complaining about his oversized pads. Do you guys remember that?
I do remember that from last year.
That was really funny. It's still kind of a running gag with some of my friends, but no, game three, like I was saying earlier, there's no reason that game should have even really been close, and he stole it. He at least stole regulation. And yeah, this series might not be that close if he weren't playing so good. Game one, yeah, you can maybe put a couple on him, but it's not been no stinkers against him, nothing that makes me go, Vazzy. Like, he has been locked in, especially since, you know, the start of game two. Yeah, the goals that beat him, there's one that bounced off of, Zach Bolduc, kind of fluky, not on him. He has been locked in, razor sharp, and it's good. He has needed to have a good playoffs over the last three outings or so. He wasn't bad last year either, but still, like, we know what his potential is in the playoffs. We know how good he is in the regular season, so it's great to see him getting back into playoff form.
And looking at these numbers real quick, just when it goes to OT, the ones that we've lost in like basically 2 minutes or less. So having the team in front of them play well for that opening shift or two is so important. That the one that game three that he lost, not on him at all, because that was the craziest shot. Kind of reminds me of some of the shots that were being so successful against him from Toronto a few years ago. Nightmare takeaway series. of What's that?
Nightmare series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, take away his eyes and just throw everything at the net, hope and pray, and somehow ended up working out for him. It's kind of what happened on that OT goal, but he kept the Lightning fully in it. And it is, I wouldn't say that he's fully back to form, but he's, because, you know, I want to see him, you know, that game three is what we, you know, expect more out of, you know, from Vasi. That was an amazing performance. If he keeps it up, though, then the rest of the league's going to have to start watching out.
Yeah, and he was damn good in game four as well. Not the same level of performance because they were just highlight reel saves. It seemed like every 30 seconds from him. But still, he was locked in and locked it down.
He's been absolutely fantastic. And the Lightning are going to need him, especially with how many penalties that they keep taking. That's one thing I really hope that they can figure out at some point in this series. Because it's putting a lot of stress on me and Vasilevsky as well. But he gets a well-earned number two star of the week. All right, number one star. Is there really any question about who this was going to be? It's Hot Bagels in the playoffs. Brandon Hagel earned the number one star of the week. He has just been absolutely stupendous. His energy, his leadership, everything about him, I absolutely love. Brandon Hagel, number one star, guys.
Quote from Jerry Reed: when you're hot, you're hot. You'll find a way to just score anything. That Kucherov, you know, shot that goes off of Hagel. I mean, crazy, you know, not a crazy goal, but just a fluky goal. The one goal in game two to start things off from that weird wicked angle. The goal in game three. Look, even Morgan's excited about it. If you could hear her, he's just finding ways to score. And then of course, just being in the right position. And this is just the scoring aspect. We have gone on and on and on about how good he is in every aspect of the ice, off the ice, everywhere. Again, future captain. We were raving about him 20 minutes ago. I don't know how much more I can say about him. You know, it's not Nikita Kucherov's stars of the list anymore. It's turning into Brandon Hagel's.
That's
not much more I can contribute. Yep.
Sorry.
Brandon Hagel, three stars of the week, for at least for the postseason to start. He leads all players right now with six goals. That's how good that he has been. And only more to come, hopefully, for the Bolts. So, all right, let's quickly here, before we wrap things up, look ahead at the schedule here for the Lightning next game. Both these teams have 2 days off, which, by the way, I still don't know why the Lightning and Canadians got so much time off. I'm assuming it's because of the travel, although you don't have the 2 days off in between going into game six. But 2 days off, they will next play Montreal back in Tampa Bay on Wednesday the 29th, and the game time has been announced for that game is at 7 p.m. Eastern. So a normal game time for Bolts and Canadians back at Benchmark International Arena. Listen, Lightning fans, be there early, be loud. Let's get this place fired up and help the Bolts.
I'll be there.
There you go. Oh, so we're winning. So we're good.
be loud. And we are on a milestone watch as well. I got to give a huge shout out and some love to Miss Sonia Bryson Kirksey. This will be her 500th anthem that she's going to do. So, cool. Super, super cool. We love her. She's our queen when it comes to the anthem. So congratulations to her coming up.
Absolutely. Well said. By the way, every game from here on out is every other day until the end of this series. So, another big one for the Bolts. They've got home ice back. If they can win it here, they'll have a chance to close things out in Montreal. We all know how good the road team letting it been this year. Guys, any final thoughts on this series before we wrap here?
Bolts and six.
Stick with it.
I love it. That's the perfect way to end it. That's going to do it for us in this episode. Thank you guys so much for tuning in once again. Don't forget to follow us on social media at RBR Lightning. Subscribe on the YouTube channel. Ring the bell for notifications so you don't miss out when we do go live. Appreciate everybody who did join us as well. Drop some comments down below. We'd love to hear from you guys as always. But with that said, we'll see you after the Wolves are advancing in the second round.
Riff.
Boom boom. Da 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 da. Boom boom. Da da da.
Jake, throw in a shop plug real quick.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.